This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Seahawks pick up a big win, a much-needed win to end their two-game losing streak yesterday over the Rams. They come back and drive down the field behind Geno Smith, and the offense gets it done. So the Seahawks are still a game behind the 49ers, but Jimmy G is out. Breaks his foot in that game. He's going to have surgery. He's done for the year. In fact, here's Kyle Shanahan after the game talking about that injury.
And Jimmy, foot, he'll be out. He'll end up need surgery. Broke a few things in there. So real unfortunate to have that. So obviously. So go ahead.
Kyle said that's season ending.
Yes.
Broke a few things in there. Now, I have, oddly enough, as much as there are the highlight shows and everything, Dave, that are on 24/7, I haven't seen the highlight of how he got hurt. Did you see it?
No, I did not. And then I had not heard of Brock Purdy. Had not heard of him.
I'd heard his name. Yeah, I've heard of him. I know that much. I've heard his name, but that's where it ends. But yeah, that's. I mean, they're the team we looked at, especially with Jimmy G playing. Trey Lance gets knocked out for the year early in the season against the Seahawks, and that's when Jimmy G got thrown into action, and they win the game. You got to wonder how much this impacts what they do. Now, this is a team that runs the ball very well. They're kind of that plug-and-play offense we've talked about. It seems like no matter who they've got in the backfield, much like the old-school Broncos, you could just plug in whoever, and they're gonna run for close to 1,000 yards if they're healthy all year. So I don't know if they just lean on that running game even more, with whether it's Purdy, whether they sign, maybe Baker Mayfield gets signed there. I think they signed who was it, Josh Johnson or somebody, who's been in the league for like 13 years, and it's like his third go round with the 49ers. So I don't know what their plan is, but I would have to believe that they're going to lean heavily on that run game, and maybe it's enough to get it done. We'll see, but maybe this is going to play into the hands of the Seattle Seahawks for the division.
I don't know, man. I sure hope so. The bad news is with this is that, okay, so Brock Purdy, he fills in. He goes, 66? I said it in the update. 68%. Throws 2 3-yard touchdowns. The longest throw of the day for him was 19 yards. Okay, and this just proves that it doesn't matter who plays quarterback for the 49ers. That's what kills me. I mean, the Dolphins were a good team. I mean, they came in, 8-3, I think, and, you know, or 8-4, and now they're 8-5. That's what's scary about their lineup, basically.
No, they're 8-4
their roster.
Now.
They're
so
8-4
they were
now.
Yeah, 8-3 coming into that game.
Yeah, so, you know, that to me it just says that they beat a really good team. Yeah, it's at home. I don't know if they have this great home field advantage or anything like that, but still it just speaks to how good their roster is. And then, you know, you add Christian McCaffrey, who had 80 yards receiving and 66 yards rushing. You've got, I think I saw that Juszczyk scored a touchdown finally. Mm-hmm. he got a throw, you know, that was one of those 3-yard throws, I think, that was delivered from Brock Purdy. I mean, it just, like I said, it just doesn't matter. And that's what's scary about it. It's not just, you know, these guys like Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel, and Juszczyk and Kittle. It's more about, like, the guys on their line. I mean, Bosa, you look at Trent Williams, their guards. I mean, they're just a very well-constructed football team, and that's, you know, like I said in the update, it's bad news for the Seahawks because they got to face these guys again, and they're on a roll right now. If you can win with a guy like Brock Purdy, man, that's against a good team.
Yeah, and that wasn't even a close game. I mean, it was 33-17, you know, so we'll see what they do. I mean, that is a very good team. Do you feel like they've got a better shot of winning the division or being a wild card? Because technically right now, with that tie that took place between Washington and the Giants, the Seahawks have a better winning percentage, so they are technically occupying the final wild card spot.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, look, the Seahawks, they have some of the, Pete said that in his presser just now, that, like, we have some things that, you know, we have leadership, we have the quarterback, we have youth that's playing really well. But, you know, so, I mean, look, they could win the division. They could pull off a win over the 49ers. The Seahawks could. That's in a couple of weeks. But, I'm just looking at what they have. San Francisco has Tampa. They got to go to Seattle, and then they got Washington coming in there. Then they're at Vegas, and then they play at home against Arizona. So I don't know how many of those games are winnable for them. Right now it looks like all of them.
Yeah, they won five in a row at this point.
Yeah, but you know, hopefully the Seahawks, that'll be a really big matchup. This game coming up next, what are we playing, Carolina?
Yeah.
So after that, you know, you're going to play San Francisco. That'll be a good head-to-head matchup, see how far the Seahawks have come, because that was maybe their worst beating.
Well, they got shut out. I mean, they scored, but the offense was shut out. They scored on special teams. So, they got owned in that game.
They threw a pick in the end zone. I mean, it was a mess. And San Francisco, and in that game, Trey Lance goes down and Jimmy Garoppolo comes in. So, like I said, the scary part is they don't care who's at quarterback. They'll just go ahead and take care of business, man.
How about Washington and in New York tying? So weird a tie.
I know.
In football. It just feels like let's come up with something to eliminate that.
It's the second one this year.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is to it, but it just. Now they're both, so Washington's 7-5-1 and the Giants are 7-4-1.
Yeah, so was that maybe the worst football game in the world when the Colts tied the Houston Texans?
Well, the Texans are hot garbage. So
they're 1-10-1 and then Indianapolis is 4-8-1. So yeah. Yeah, and Washington and New York, both really good teams. Apparently, Washington getting it done, man. But
how are they doing that? Taylor Heineke is their quarterback, and they're finding a way to get it done. I mean, maybe we're overvaluing the quarterback position. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you're seeing teams find a way with less people you look at and go, really, with that guy? That guy's getting it done. But yeah.
I mean, well, and I heard an analyst today saying that, you know, Heineke, he makes some terrible throws every once in a while. But
he's completing 61% of his passes, just under 62, 61.8, nine touchdowns, five picks.
They might have the best defensive line in the entire NFL. Those two inside guys that they have, Payne and can't remember the other guy's name. They have a bunch of first rounders in there that are just monsters. So defensively, they're really good. So, yeah, I think the leadership there from Ron Rivera. I think Rivera's just a great coach.
Man, and what's interesting is they had won 6 of 7 coming into this game. They tie with the Giants. Now they've got a bye week, and then they play the Giants. How about that? Yeah. So the little chance to exact a little. Little revenge, I guess, and try to establish themselves. I hate seeing Washington succeed. Nothing against any of the players. It's about the owner. Obviously, we like Rivera, like the players, just not the owner.
I like that Rivera's kind of taken over, though, and he's sort of the face of the franchise. And, you know, and if there was a good move for what's-his-face, you know, at least he got out of the public eye. So people like me, anyway, whenever I think of the Washington Commanders, I think of Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio. But, yeah, I don't think so much about Snyder. But, yeah, it was funny. After that game, I was watching the reaction of the players after when the final gun goes off, and I'm like, they were all kind of like just wandering around like, huh? What do we do? Do we go over and shake their hands? I mean, are we happy? Are we sad?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a weird – it's a very confusing gray area to be in. Like, we didn't win, but we didn't lose. So, that's weird. That is weird. Now, you're just looking at the NFC. Yeah, I mean, the Eagles have the best record in the league at 11-1. All of a sudden, the Cowboys look good. Cowboys are, I mean, not all of a sudden. They've been, you know, a winning team, but I don't know that we were really considering them. They're sitting there at 9-3. The Vikings are 10-2. The Vikings?
Amazing.
And then look at the rest of the, I mean, hey, congrats to the Lions. They won the fifth game of the season. They're in second place at 5-7.
I saw the playoff picture, and they're in there. They're in there at 5-7. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So, yeah, it's Yeah, but you look at the East, man. It's just ridiculous. 11-1, 9-3, 7-4, 7-4-1, and 7-5-1. So that's obviously the power. I saw a thing over the weekend, and it was about the Philadelphia offensive line, and it kind of brings home to, you know, how much a really good offensive line, how valuable that is. And those guys are playing so well together. But one of the Kelce brothers, of course, is the center there. And he, I guess they're the offensive linemen are putting together a Christmas album.
Oh, boy.
That they're singing. And one of them, the guard, was like, he was wailing. Like, everybody was like, whoa, where'd that voice come from?
Really?
But they've got a good thing going there with, you know, both sides of the ball as far as their line goes are really good. So, yeah, it's kind of a weird year in the NFC, though. And NFC West right now starting to kind of, you know, who knew that the Rams were going to be 3-9 coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, man.
They've lost 6 in a row.
Wow.
6 in a row. And maybe they were thinking defensively, we got to stop Geno Smith. We got to stop this team. And that final drive and the game was theirs. They had a 3-point lead. Couldn't get it done.
You know, if the Seahawks end up, you know, getting edged out by a game, that overtime game against Vegas, and for me anyway, it's still like I'm still hungover from that. That was ridiculous.
That one's still bothering you.
283 yards rushing. You've got to be kidding me.
Well, they caught Vegas when they're hot too, because they won yesterday. So that's 3 in a row they've won.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe just bad timing, but we'll see. You know, Cincinnati, I mean, we're going into Kansas City, and Cincinnati, I think they said Joe Burrow has beaten Patrick Mahomes like 3 times or something. So, you know, maybe the Chiefs can be had. I saw that Travis Kelce actually got stripped and, you know, gave up the ball. That guy's having an amazing year. So, you know, maybe they can get lucky and win a game or two like that, you know, at Kansas City. That's their toughest opponent by far, I think. Although, would you say with San Francisco and the way things are going for them and their roster and everything, that maybe it's about as difficult of a game as KC?
Feels like it. It does. I mean, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this Seahawks team, because you're feeling, as the kids like to say, a certain type of way after these last 2 losses. Just kind of going, all right, what's going on here? And there's still concerns, and we haven't jumped into the defense with any intention yet. We will. There's still concerns with the Seahawks team. You didn't go out there and blow the doors off a Rams team that was, you know, DeMarco and everybody told us how they've taped together this O-line. I think they said on the broadcast that they've had more O-linemen play this year than any team in the league. Some stat about their O-line and just the revolving door it's been.
It was that there have been 11 different iterations of offensive line combinations, in other words. So, yeah, 11. So
that's a lot, Dave.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah, so the fact that they were really able to give the Seahawks a run for their money is looking more and more, you know, it's, I feel a certain kind of way about this win, Bob.
I was hoping it'd be more dominant. I mean, listen, a win's a win. Bottom line business, you won the game, but that doesn't mean you don't look at what took place in the game and point to, hey, this was great. Yeah, this wasn't so great. Or this alleviated my concern, that drive down the field, this run defense, that didn't do much to alleviate any concerns. So we'll get into more of that. But they got the win. That's what matters. And there are teams in this league right now that you brought up, the 1-10-1 Texans and teams like that, that would kill for a win. They don't care how it comes. And I would assume one of those teams would be the Denver Broncos, who are now 3-9. They've lost 4 in a row. And wow. I can't imagine. The only person I think, was it Lewis Riddick that picked them to finish last?
Yes, he did. He sure did.
Do you remember what his reasons were? Did he?
I don't remember. I think it was more about the other teams being good. But I think he said something about, you know, a new play caller for Russell Wilson, and that doesn't always necessarily mean it's going to be better or something like that. But yeah, that was kind of a long shot. But man, you know, at the time. But you look at the way they're playing, and they scored 9 points yesterday. Lost 10-9.
Ugh.
They even got a couple of picks. I mean, it's been really awesome for Seahawks fans, because, you know, you're looking at, they're tied for the second worst team in the NFL. They're tied with the Rams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both,
I mean,
both 3-9.
Texans are determined to own that worst record.
Sure.
But you look at yesterday, the 10-9 to the Ravens, who they faced Tyler Huntley, because Lamar Jackson got knocked out of the game with a knee injury. And Huntley comes in and goes 27 of 32 for 187 yards and an interception. But he did carry the ball 10 times for 41 yards and a touchdown, which obviously was more than enough. I mean, Russell, I didn't see the game. I don't even know if it was on. I saw just highlights on Red Zone, but efficient. I don't know what kind of plays they're calling or what they're asking him to do. 17 of 22 for 189 yards, no picks, no TDs. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on offensively that they were what he was being asked to do. They certainly ran the ball 28 times. They threw it 22 times. So they were leaning on the run game, but it didn't look like anybody was particularly effective. I mean, Murray had 47 yards on 17 carries. Russell was the second leading rusher at 21 yards on two carries. So I don't know what's going on with the play calling. I don't know how much of yesterday was on Russell versus the scheme, the play calling. I have no idea, but 10-9 sounds like just a pig of a game.
It's so weird there. I mean, look, that was the one element that they were really missing. I mean, their offense wasn't great, but, you know, their defense was really good, and they thought they had some of the parts on offense. And then you bring in, you know, a guy who's a play caller, and he's going to be the head coach, and now it just doesn't work at all. I'm just so curious to know exactly what's going on there, you know, with
there's no way Hackett makes it to next season, right? I mean,
yeah, maybe he's just not cut out. I've always said this, that, you know, not everybody's a head coach. Everybody thinks just because somebody who, you know, is a good coordinator, who's the guy in Kansas City? That
Eric Bieniemy.
Bieniemy, yeah. I was going to say the professor thinks he swears too much or something.
that was Gruden, you think swears too much, right? Wasn't that for a car?
Well, I think that was the case with Bieniemy too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he actually was, you know, I'm like, come on, that can't be the reason. But he's just not, I mean, look, he's had enough opportunities, right? I mean, he's been, he's gone in and done the interviews and everything every year. Bieniemy, they're always talking about it. And, you know, he's maybe just not a head coach. Maybe Hackett is just not, you know, cut out for that, I guess. I don't know. It's interesting to see that some people kind of find their ceiling and just go, okay, yeah, I guess I'm not a head coach, and go back to being coordinators or whatever.
Here's Russell talking just about the idea of not liking the feeling of losing so many close games.
I really lost many games like this. So it's a new feeling. One I don't like, one I don't want to experience ever again. And one that we have to figure out how to do that and how to not experience this as a collective group.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I mean, he started the season like Russell Wilson. He threw for 340 yards against the Seahawks in that opening game. They lost by a point. Now they had two turnovers, obviously, in the red zone that killed him, but he looked like Russell in that game, and then it just started going downhill. They won the next two, but against Houston, they beat him. He threw for 219 yards, and they beat San Francisco. How about that?
Yeah, that's
maybe 11-10 was the final in that game. He threw for 184 yards in that game. Then they lose back-to-back overtime games, 12-9 to Indianapolis, and then 19-16 they lose to the Chargers. And then, you know, you look at another overtime loss to Vegas. They've got three overtime losses. They lose this one 10-9. They lose the opener 17-6. Yeah, they've had a lot of games that could have gone the other way. Again, not watching everything that happened, I don't know how close they really were to you know, driving down the field and pulling out a victory. But losing's bad, but when you lose that many close games, three overtime games and a couple others by 1 point, that's brutal.
Yeah, and, you know, those are the games that Russ used to win.
Yeah.
I mean, he was always – he had the most fourth-quarter comebacks. And so, you know, I mean, I just don't – the one thing I remember Mark Schlereth said to us is that maybe Pete was on to something, that, you know, you coach guys and call plays to accentuate the best of their abilities, and maybe that's not what's going on. I mean, I don't – apparently Russ isn't a guy who can just go and play in any offense, you know, and I feel like – the way that they coached him here and the offenses, and I feel like maybe Pete knew what his weaknesses were, and Hackett doesn't know that. You know, I think that's a fair question to ask, because there sure is a lot going on around. I mean, you have to, okay, their offensive line really sucks. Their offense is really terrible. What's going on there? Is it the play calling? I mean, He's definitely not playing well right now. I'm just very curious as to what the reason is for that. I wouldn't sit there and make excuses for him like, oh, it's the coach and it's the plays and it's the offensive line. I think there's something going on that just is not computing in his brain.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Again, we don't see full games out here. I haven't seen a full game of Russell since the opener against the Seahawks. So it's all about highlights and looking at the box scores and, you know, reading analysts talking about it. But
well, and then listening during like Monday night and listening to Troy Aikman and some of the quarterbacks that are like that Monday night game against Sandy or the Chargers. He was like, why is he throwing there? He shouldn't be doing that. I mean, he was pretty harsh, but, you know, he was just like, I don't get what he's doing right now. So, yeah, it's not like they're, you know, everybody's just saying it to say it. I mean, you've got guys that know how to play the position that are saying, yeah, he's not doing the right things. And again, you know, it could be coaching. It could be that, you know, Pete knew something about what his capabilities are and, you know, coached him to the best of those capabilities. Whereas in Denver, they don't really know what they got there.
All right, coming up, the Seahawks did get the win, but has the run defense become an even bigger issue? We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
We got our player spotlight coming up at 5:30 today. We have that every day, as you know. And joining us will be a man who got thrown into action because of injuries yesterday. Tony Jones Jr. will be the conversation. Really nice guy. So stay tuned for that one coming up at 5:30 here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710. One of the things that we sort of alluded to, Dave, and brushed the surface of, the run defense. Mm-hmm. The run defense for the Seahawks did not appear to be much better than it's been. And this was, we were a little leery because we talked about them going up against the worst rushing team in the entire NFL. That would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the Buccaneers ran over them for, what, 167 yards, something like that. And then you come up in this game, we talked about the fact that the Rams were the second worst rushing offense in the NFL, averaging just over 79.7 yards a game. That's what they were coming into the game with. And then you especially the first drive was brutal. And I know you talked about your anger after that drive, but they ran they ran for 171 yards and two touchdowns on the Seahawks. Like with what we talked about, a patchwork offensive line. They've got the most starting incarnations of the line, most players going through there, and DeMarco told us how they're just taped together. They didn't have the threat of a passing game, really, with a backup quarterback and Cooper Kupp out. So you thought they might lean on the run game, and they did it effectively. What did you see?
Well, let's just go through the very first drive. And, you know, I was going through and just writing everything down. And first of all, the term that I use is called turned. When you get turned, that means that you're not squared to the line of scrimmage. Also, they used to call it opening the gate.
Yeah.
Don't open the gate. Don't turn sideways. Stay square to the line of scrimmage. I have on that drive, Bruce gets turned. Bruce gets too much of tackle. Bruce sniffs inside. Bruce lunges. Those are four separate plays, mm-hmm. by the way. So, I mean, that, and then on the other ones, it's, you know, whether it's Michael Jackson or it's Tariq Woolen. I thought Ryan Neal did his job. I thought mostly the linebackers did their job. I said the one little tiny thing, Jordan Brooks had a tackle where he didn't wrap the guy up. But for the most part, those guys did really well. But that's the problem. Those are the little things that happen that all of a sudden turn it into a big play. And that way, you know, when those things happen, any running back in the NFL can get yards. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how good your run game is. If somebody makes that big of a mistake, and they were really testing the cutback part of it. You know, they were starting, and that's what the Raiders did. They started, you know, one way and then cut it back the other. They also ran to the weak side a bunch of times with the fly sweep. So, and the one where Bruce gets turned, that was just a running play. But then, you know, the one where I mentioned that he gets too much of the tackle, he's the contain guy. He's the force guy, I should say. He has to turn the play back in, and he just goes right down the middle of the tackle. Instead of, you know, you have to keep your outside arm and your outside leg free. So you have to play the outer half of that tackle that's coming to block you. And then a couple of times, well, one time he thinks he could go inside, and then he gets pinned. You know, and then the screen, I don't know what he was doing on that play, but that was the screen that took him almost all the way down to the goal line. Here's what I would say, Cam Akers. There's a couple that I just need to see the all 22, but Cam Akers, you have to give him some credit. I think he ran for over 100 yards against the Seahawks in 2020 in that playoff game. So he's got some talent, and he had a couple of good runs where he was just following his blockers and everything. But for the most part, you'd be surprised how it's one guy. It's one guy breaking down a lot of times. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about that 86-yard run. I felt like if Puna had stayed his, you know, kept his shoulder square, I think that probably would have been like a 4-yard run. So that's what's going on. And I think as long as you have young guys and as long as you have, you know, like I said, what did I say about Tariq Woolen? Sometimes he blacks out a little bit and in the run game. That's where, and the corners are part of it. You know, the way I explained it earlier was that, like, it's kind of like the sack. You know, when you take a sack, you always blame the offensive line. It's not always the offensive line. Sometimes it's the quarterback. Sometimes it's the running back. It's the receiver, the tight end, whatever. A lot of times it's the corner in the run game. You know, those guys have to be up in the line of scrimmage and involved when there's, especially when there's a cutback.
Yeah.
So that's where they're really testing them, that when they start one way and go back the other. And then the fly sweep's kind of like that. You know, and so that's where they got tested, and, you know, the Rams just went right down the field.
Yeah, it's, you know, when we talk about in-game adjustments and things like that, I know the defense got better in terms of what they were allowing in the way of scoring, but it just to see that again, you know, on the heels of how they lost to the Raiders, you know, on an 86-yard run play, and the week before that it was against the worst rushing offense in the NFL, you just kind of, I don't know. I guess I was expecting more in terms of, all right, yeah, I can. Yeah, maybe they're not going to shut them out completely, but you just see that where you walk away from the game going, okay, yeah, that looked better. That looked better. Is it perfect? No, it'll never be perfect. That's just not how it goes in this league. But certainly wanted to see some improvement and just really didn't, whether it's Bruce, whether it's Tariq Woolen, whether it's Daryl Taylor, whether you talk about it. All it takes is one guy to do the wrong thing, and there goes the open door. And somebody making hay out of it. And you came up against a team that really just had nothing going in the way of a run game. I mean, Cam Akers, his high watermark this season was 61 yards. He ran for 60 yesterday and 2 touchdowns. He had 1 touchdown on the entire season coming into this game, and he had 2 yesterday. So it wasn't so much about one guy like, you know, like Jacobs last week running for 200 plus yards. It wasn't like just being hit over the head with a mallet repeatedly by the same guy, but they still got it done. They still got it done in a way that you didn't expect to, considering who they were, what they had to work with, and what they didn't have to work with. That was really disappointing to see.
Well, the only thing I think you can do now is look forward and see, like, what kind of lessons did they learn? I feel like there's a lot of teachable moments in this tape that they're looking at with the Rams, because there's so many times where everybody's doing their job except for one guy. And I always say this, you know, if you're in high school, you're in college, you can get away with, you know, one guy screwing up his drop or his gap or whatever. In the NFL, they find it. They always find it. So I'm hoping that, because there was a screenplay that I was like, wow, that is really good. They stopped a screenplay, and you could see everybody stepping up into their gap and just not getting out of their lane, and just collectively just corralling the running back. And, you know, so there were some really good things that happened there too. So I'm just hoping that going forward that there were enough of those teachable moments that they can go, okay, I get it now. I see. You know, you've seen enough different situations where it's correctable, that, you know, these guys can actually take a positive out of this, is what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I hope that too. I don't expect it, because they had more than enough teachable moments in the beginning of the season. They had them in the previous two games. I don't know how many more moments they need to learn. You know, I mean, it's not like this is a new thing where they can go, oh, wow, we hadn't faced this or we hadn't, you know, committed that error before or anything. No, the beginning of the season was awful. So there was plenty to look at there. And then the last two games, there was plenty to look at there. So I don't know.
Yeah, they also got a lot of young guys. I mean, that's the other thing. You got, like I said, Tariq Woolen. I mean, he's going to make spectacular plays, but you know, him and Kobe Bryant are very fundamental in the run game.
Yeah.
So they you know, that's a little bit of that as well. But no, I think there's still a chance for them to you know, improve and get better, and you know, maybe they can get back to that point that they were sort of. I mean, I don't expect them to be holding them to 95 yards a game like they were during that 4-game streak and getting 19 sacks, but if they can get something like that, you've got to be able to stop the run. What the running game and turnover ratio is what you get you into the playoffs.
Right. All right, coming up, what did the Seahawks think about playing against Bobby Wagner? We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, this is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
We saw Tony Jones play significant minutes yesterday. We'll hear from him coming up at 5:30. But I think you guys were kind of joking. What was the plan? Who was going to be next in the running back carousel? And Pete Carroll was kind of asked about that as well.
When Walker goes out and Dallas gets injured, you have to tell Smith, here we go, we have to rely on you. It just was a natural hero, obviously.
No, I went to Belor. We had more Belor, you know, and I got Nick ready to go. He was revved up, and he was getting in his two-point stance and getting ready to get, you know, get in there and if we needed him.
There we go.
He's practicing his stance. I love it. I would love to have seen him back there.
Yeah, I would, too. We were talking about with him the other day, and that I think he's a better linebacker. It's not any knock on his running back skills, but I don't know. I feel like you could probably play linebacker longer than you could play running back in the NFL. That's just me taking a shot at my former position.
Yeah.
Any stiff can play there. But I thought that. I thought maybe Marquise Goodwin would be a guy, but he had the screwed up hand going on. So, yeah, they were in bad shape, man.
Yeah, that was rough. Belor would have been the obvious choice. It would have been fun to see him get out there. I bet he could have done some things.
Yeah, I think at least he would know. I mean, I think Tony Jones just looked a little bit, you know, off step and off time and everything, which you can understand. He probably hasn't had a whole lot of reps. So, but yeah, this week he's probably going to be getting a lot of them.
Sweeping the dial.
We saw a lot of hugs and a pretty nice scene after the game between Bobby Wagner and a lot of his former teammates. And DK Metcalf was asked what it was like to play against Bobby Wagner for the first time.
It was fun, you know, just to talk to him and knowing that he was on the other side of the ball and knowing, you know, the early morning workouts and all the times that, you know, we got to spend with each other. And then just to go against him on the other side of the ball, he's one, you know, hell of a linebacker, a hell of a competitor, and you know, just great to go against him. And, you know, he has all my respect, you know, coming into this game. But after this game and playing him, he has, you know, much more respect, you know, for me.
Well, and Bobby was kind of a, I'm not going to say father figure, big brother to DK out there, wasn't he?
Yes.
You know, on the sidelines when DK was getting pretty heated, it was Bobby the one telling him, hey, man, you know, just take it easy. You're going to be fine. And trying to calm him down. And DK had talked about it. I remember saying, I wasn't trying to hear it right then, but then we talked later or something like that. That Bobby was kind of the wise old veteran that was trying to talk some sense into him.
Right. It was the Green Bay game. And I think he tried to talk to him on the field. And then, you know, he was like you said, not wanting to hear anything. But then they sat together on the plane on the way back, or Bobby went and sat with him and just talked him through it. It was pretty awesome, man. DK is a really nice guy. He really is a good dude. And I think he's just like everybody else. You get angry out there. I was always pissed off when I played. That's the way you have to play. You just have to be. It'd be easy for you, Bob. We both easily get pissed off. So, yeah, that's how you have to play. But there's a line that you got to draw. And I think that's where Bobby, I've never seen Bobby super angry, but he's always, that's what makes him such a good person. He's very much in control of his emotions and all that. But, yeah, that's really helped DK. I just, with DK, I never worry about him. The reason why, his awareness. He knows. He knows that it's a challenge for him.
Sweeping the dial.
Tariq Woolen racked up his 6th interception of the season already. 6 already, and he had that yesterday. But maybe the play that was arguably more impressive, certainly one that was talked about a lot, was his deflected pass. He had a catch up to it. He was beaten on the play. They broke down how he recovered after initially getting beaten on the play.
A little bit, you know. Once I seen the quarterback looking, that was just like, okay, now I can speed up a little bit. But also, I felt like if I played it a little bit more faster, then maybe I could have got another interception. But, hey, I mean, as long as I made the play and it was another touchdown, I ain't tripping.
So mellow. That's about as animated as I've heard him. He's usually much more relaxed than that.
Well, and he talked kind of fast there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, usually it's like, shoot.
Yeah. I think he might have let an S-bomb slip in the post game last night. I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, you know, another interception, breaks up that pass. He's playing that spot extremely well. And like, you can't help but reference where he came from, and that was a wide receiver in the 5th round being converted into a cornerback at the highest level possible. It's just, it's amazing what he's done to this point. It really is.
It must be fun to be that fast. And especially at that position, you can see him be able to, you know, recover. And he said something about, if I'd have recovered a little faster, if I'd have gone a little faster, I could have got an interception. I'm like, oh, really? That was an option for you?
Yeah.
For most of us, it's like, I'm running as hard as I can. If I get there, I get there. But for him, yeah, he's just got plenty of speed. And, you know, he's starting to, I mean, he was part of the run game, some of the problems. You know, I thought, but he, not totally, you know, there wasn't a whole, it wasn't glaring, but, you know, he's part of that. Kobe Bryant's part of that. Those guys are still rookies. It's hard to believe, though. And I kind of, at this point in the season, you kind of go, not really a rookie anymore. Now you're a vet, right? Playing into your 12th, 13th, 14th game.
And I think he's got the eyes, certainly, and the respect of the opponents out there. Remember when we talked to him, he talked about some guys coming up to him and, you know, giving him praise and, you know, just talking about what he's doing. So it's not going unnoticed. Yeah, he's in his rookie season, but you're right. He doesn't mean he's mistake-free, but he's playing really, really well. And I don't know, you know, where he ranks amongst, you know, defensive rookies in the league, but my goodness, he's got to be in that conversation for Defensive Rookie of the Year, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. You know, it's funny. You see all these other players, like you said. I know I saw it in Arizona where they were coming over and talking to him. And just, and I'm sure everybody loves him because he's a nice guy. He's very laid back, cool guy, good talker. Shoot. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't see him getting cocky or anything like that, that's for sure. But it's cool to see to have these guys when they're rookies and kind of imagine, like, okay, what kind of vets are they going to be? Like Tyler Lockett, you remember we thought...
It's the same guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, we thought maybe he'll turn into like more of like a Richard Sherman type. No.
No.
He's still Tyler Lockett. I hope... Tariq Woolen even said it. Somebody was like comparing him to Sherm or, you know, somebody else, and he's like, hey, I just like to be Tariq Woolen. So maybe he'll just continue to be his laid-back self.
He's doing it very well. So I would say stick with that. Stick with that. All right, coming up, the Seahawks have a major question on offense to sort out. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.